Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday. It is noon Central Time. That means it is time for DOT compliance. Thank you so much for joining us today. What we're going to do, as always, on Wednesdays is we want to help with DOT questions, MC authority questions, FMCSA regulations, DOT violations, whatever you've got, whatever you're dealing with. If you know a friend that has an issue and they need advice, well, we've got Brian Riker. So do me a favor. Go ahead. You see that share button below the video? You can click share. You can click copy. You can grab that YouTube link. Text it, email it, share it on social media. We're live for the next 30 minutes. Brian is answering questions. He's an expert consultant, and he wants to help you. Also, if you're starting at the beginning, you've got questions about auto transport in general, go to autotransportintel.com, click on sign up, become an ATI insider. We're going to put you in touch with our coach, Ty, put you on the weekly email blast so you see what's happening on Tuesday nights, get some industry information, maybe join a round table. Please do also go ahead and say hello in the live chat. If it's your first time here, please feel welcome. We've got the regulars in. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Devin at Victory Lap Transport. Just stopped in Fredericksburg, Virginia. No fuel shortage here yet. Wow, that's interesting. Very interesting. Thanks for letting me know, because I was just reading something about North Carolina. We'll get to that. Danny B. says hello. What's up, Danny B.? John with Finest Towing and Recovery is checking in. What's going on? Of course, Brian Riker also saying hello in the live chat, so you can live chat to him. You can talk to him, live chat with him, post your questions, put him in the live chat. Hey, Chris, what's going on? Thank you for the picture. I just got the picture. We're going to share that, too. Hey, Brian, how long do you think the fuel shortage will be for the East Coast? Awesome. Great question. So it is time to get to Brian. We got to get this show on the road. Literally on the road. What is going on, Brian?
Hey, Jay. How are you?
Hey.
Oh, I'm sitting in a hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm sitting still today for a change. I'm enjoying it.
That's interesting. So you're in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mentioned that because I was reading 70% of gas stations in North Carolina don't have fuel right now.
It's awful down here. People are panic buying. And the problem is the Colonial Pipeline that's out of service. It is the main pipeline down here. It provides 45% of the fuel, the finished refined fuel for the East Coast. But it also feeds two major airports, Atlanta and Charlotte. And down here, they don't have very many options to truck the fuel in. You get closer to the coast and you can bring it in by ship tanker, or you get up to the north end, the pipeline ends up in New Jersey, and we have other options within a couple hundred miles to bring it in. But right here, they're landlocked. We're in trouble.
That is nuts. All right. Well, I don't want to stay on that topic because it just, that's what everyone's going to be talking about right now. So let's put this up here. We know that we bet you can't stump Brian. Thank you so much, David, for sharing that, that photo. That's David of Two Bears Transport. All right, so here we go. How's this doing? What do you think of this? What do you think of that beauty?
I don't even know where to begin with that
Doesn't that pretty much sum up what, like, super truckers think of wedgies?
Yes.
But here, Chris just sent me this, and we talk about it, like, every week. How we doing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see. He really should move that load down to the bottom unless he's just getting ready to load or unload right there, because that's just a flip waiting to happen with the weight being all up on the top front of the trailer. What else do I see happening in there?
Oh, okay.
I see somebody in a safety vest standing up by the front. So maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's in the process of loading or unloading.
And I'll tell you what. And so I think what Chris said is, I think he talked to the guy and we're being optimistic.
So, yeah, I see his ramps are packed up. So I think he's leaving that car right up there.
I think he is. One. I think he's thinking, all in a day's work. So let's keep moving here. This was Fast Eddie shared this, and you commented, in summation, what in a nutshell, what did you watch and what do you think?
All right, on that video, the officer was technically correct to pull someone over for a left lane violation, even though the truck driver was doing the speed limit. It's kind of nonsense, but I understand that the theory is, even though the speed limit is 70, let's say, average traffic flow is probably closer to 75 or 78 miles an hour. If you're out in the left lane, people are going to do stupid, dangerous stuff to get around you. That said, the issue that Fast Eddie had was the introduction of cameras somehow magically causing an official to remember their ethical standards. I think a camera keeps all of us on edge, and so it makes us change the way we behave. That said, we're all human. We all have bad days. I'm going to chalk it up to this officer was having a bad day. The truck driver obviously is a little skeptical of law enforcement. And
he said, I just want to make sure you don't shoot me.
Yes, he did in the video.
Oh my God. You know what? And the trooper was pretty cool given that comment.
Yes, this could have been handled a lot better. It could have turned out a lot worse.
I thought the trooper did a pretty good job.
Honestly. Yes, I did too. At the end of the day, we all just have our own jobs to do and we all want to go home safely. I will caution, though, it's not against the law to record law enforcement doing their job, but you have to pay attention to the rules of the state you're in. Some states do have restrictions on announcing that you're recording audio. They do have restrictions on what you can and cannot do with that audio and video you record. So again, just make sure that what you're about to do is legal in the state you're doing it in.
It would be very hard to be enforcement. And so even though you've heard me weigh in, you know, with my nonsense, I would not, somebody's got to do that job and I wouldn't be good at it. So, so kudos to that officer. We're going to move on to the next one. This is interesting. I meant to share this before the road check. It's still interesting. This is a 2020 graph, but it's fascinating when you look at the map of, right, intense enforcement.
Sure. And this just goes to show you that certain states take motor carrier enforcement to the extreme. And it's exactly what I expect when I'm looking at that map. New York, California, Texas, they have a large concentration of commercial vehicles. The one that kind of jumps out as unusual would be Maryland down there. But I do know that they do have a very serious commercial vehicle enforcement program. And it is nice, though, that most of the I-40 corridor and the rest of the states there are pretty relaxed. But yeah, this is interesting to know, and it definitely shows that there is a imbalance in motor carrier enforcement, because these numbers should all be equal since they broke it down per lane mile. That's the amount of lanes times the number of miles you have in your state. You should have a fairly equal enforcement level, but as we can see, we don't. There are some states that are very intense.
Let's see here. I just found this interesting, talking about facts of FMCSA offsite audits. Anything to add here?
Not really. The offsite audit is becoming the go-to for FMCSA. I think that they're actually a little weak in what they look at for an audit, that a on-site compliance review goes much more in depth. But the key to surviving these off-site audits is only give them exactly what they're looking for. The email will be very specific. They're going to ask for very specific portions of your driver qualification files, your ELD records, your inspect maintenance files, drug and alcohol, etc. Only give them what they're looking for. Never volunteer more information, because that's where you get in trouble. If you give it to them, they can use it against you. If you only give them what they're looking for, they're going to look at it. If they have questions for clarification, they'll ask follow-up questions. The offsite audit is a fairly simple process.
You know, I love what you just said, because I love to think about, this is not legal advice, but we're talking about when you're in a, when you have a legal question pending. Yes, only answer the question. Do not add extra information. We know you, people get nervous and they get talkative and they want to put people at ease. But then you say something like, man, I'm sure glad you didn't come by last week when I was drinking heavy, you know, so you know, just stay calm and don't add extra information when you don't need to, because you can open up a can of worms that, man, now you can't put the horse back in the barn. Okay, the self-weighing F-150. I saw this on YouTube. Are truck scales a thing of the past? Ford just introduced a new self-weighing F-150. What's your take on this?
I don't know exactly how accurate their self-weighing is. It uses a computer algorithm to measure engine output, transmission output, torque, etc., to come up with an estimated weight, at least a system that I, as I understand it, to work on the self-weighing F-150. They have this available on a couple of models, and it calculates an estimated weight based on performance factors of the truck. Now, I could be wrong. I could be speaking out my butt because I haven't seen this particular graphic, but the one I am familiar with that Ford was experimenting with bases it on transmission output to figure out what the truck weighs. That said, I love onboard scales on a commercial vehicle. Saves you $12 a pop at the CAT scale. You know, as you're loading your vehicle, if you're legal, I think we all should have onboard scales if we're running close to our gross or our axle weights.
It's pretty fascinating. I can't really see the downside of this except for when the sensor breaks. But yeah, true. No, I like it a lot. I think it's really interesting. And again, you know, full disclosure, Brian and I did not go over these topics before the show. So I'm throwing him with the wolves as normal on a Wednesday. FMCSA preps for 2020 launch of entry-level driver training rule.
This one has been postponed a couple of times now.
Okay.
I support the entry-level driver training rule because truck driver training in the United States is a joke right now. There are companies that can offer you CDL in a day. I just saw an ad for one in the Allentown, Pennsylvania area last week. This is designed to, yes, this is designed to stem that. The reason this has been put off is not because FMCSA wasn't ready, but the individual states were not ready to implement and track this. It's going to require no specific number of hours, but it's going to require that you've been educated in and shown proficiency in a certain number of topics. Again, there's no requirement for an actual number of hours or miles on the road, supervised driving or anything like that. This is more academic than anything else, but it is, it's a step in the right direction. It fell short. And what annoys me about this rule, it's what was called a negotiated rulemaking, which means industry partners such as motor carriers, enforcement officers, FMCSA, insurance companies, safety advocates, all came together on a committee. I think there were 26 members of this committee, and they voted for what they thought should be an entry-level driver training standards, which included a component, like 24 of the 26 of them voted to include a minimum number of hours driving on the highway. And yet when FMCSA published the final rule, they left out the minimum number of hours on the drive driving on the highway.
Fantastic. I'm still thinking about CDL in one day. You know, you got get your 1 week bath and your CDL in one day. And yeah, man, this is fantastic.
Yeah, there was a company in Allentown, Pennsylvania that's a third party tester, and it drives me nuts because it takes away the legitimacy of the third party examiners. But they, if you come to them with your learner's permit, you'll go through a short training class in the morning and you'll take your official road test in the afternoon and have your Class A CDL.
But you know, with the fast food nation, man, that's right up their alley. Okay. Labor Department drops independent contractor rule. I put this right next to, because I think we're talking about AB5. Am I right?
Yes, they're tied together. California AB5 rule, short answer, it's an attack on the independent freelancer in all industries, not just trucking.
Right.
We were just dealt a big blow in the trucking industry because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel, decided that the lower court's ruling to put a stay on enforcement while they had a trial to determine whether it actually is applicable to trucking was inappropriate. They feel this is applicable to trucking, and at the end of the month, it's going to be able to be enforced in California. The U.S. Department of Labor under the Trump administration had issued some guidance on independent contractor rules that also called out the owner-operator model of trucking, but it was more favorable to us.
Right.
Well, with the normal review of all last-minute rules issued by a previous administration, the current Labor Department under the Biden administration decided to drop that rule. They're looking at creating their own. The concern in the industry is they're going to use a similar or the same three-prong ABC test that California Assembly Bill 5 uses, which will basically wipe the owner-operator model out. Because the B prong is problematic to independent truckers, you cannot be engaged in the same principal industry as the company that you're contracting with is. Well, a guy that owns and operates a truck is a trucker. Even if he's leasing on to somebody, they are a trucking company. If they own and operate their own trucks, well, then you won't be able to lease on to them. We're probably going to see a throwback to the old owner-operator model for union carriers, where you're paid a lease payment for the truck, and then you're paid a W-2 check as a employee driver to drive your own truck. It has the potential to completely disrupt the current owner-operator model that we use in the United States.
So, in your opinion, my understanding has been we're headed in the wrong direction. Are we, or are you in favor of this?
I believe we're heading in the wrong direction.
Okay.
The intent is good here. California was intending to crack down on the abuse of independent contractors, like the port truckers that are misclassified as independents. The guys that hire someone on a 1099, control them like they're an employee. They have no chance of profit loss or bettering themselves. They're just looking to avoid workers' compensation insurance and payroll taxes. That crap needs to stop, because that is why they're looking at regulations like this, to try to stop it without fully understanding how it hurts. This affects outside of trucking. This affects me as a freelance writer. I write for several trade publications,
right,
but I'm not an employee of any of them. It affects our friends that work in Hollywood. I have truck drivers that work for three different companies in one 8-hour shift because there's three transportation contractors on a set, but they're there with the union to drive the truck around. This affects them.
You couldn't even
everybody.
Be a dispatcher, right? Even a
Correct.
Dispatcher.
That is an independent contractor of somebody.
This is an attack on like entrepreneurism, isn't it?
It's an attack on the gig economy.
Unbelievable.
And
Americans I have a hard time talking about it.
Yes, Americans' independent spirit has shown that we like to be responsible for our own survival. We like to leave the cave, kill something, and drag it home every day. And not everybody wants to be a employee of somebody. We don't all want to end up working for Mom Incorporated somewhere.
Well, exactly. And it seems like I've already said in the past that tax laws and other laws seem to set up so that we all work in cubicles for the next 40 years. Well, that's what this is, right?
Exactly. That's the concept, is we're all going to work for three or four large corporations that are going to control the country.
Nuts, man. Nuts. It makes me crazy. Let's move on. OIDA-led coalition asks rail advocates not to derail trucking industry. We're going to talk about this last week. What do we have here?
On this one, it's ironic. We're fighting the insurance increase that is proposed for the motor carrier industry, where our minimum liability will go from $750,000, or $1 million for those of us that haul cars, to at least $2.1 million or more, with one proposal bringing it almost to $5 million. the same representative to introduce the Insurance Act, which is a standalone bill that brings our insurance to $5 million, Representative Chuy Garcia out of Illinois, also was part of a coalition that sent a letter to ask for a pause in the implementation of a mandatory insurance increase for the rail industry, the commuter rail industry, that was only going to increase their base rate, their base insurance coverage by 10%, not 200 to 500%. The same man who said that the truckers can afford to have an increase in insurance because it is absolutely necessary to make people whole that are injured. And I'm not saying it's not. It's just that our current insurance covers and makes whole everybody in all but 0.6%. Less than 1% of truck-involved crashes are covered by the current $750,000 minimum. And yet here, commuter rail, a simple 10% increase in their public liability is going to put the industry out of business. And so this same man has asked that this already enacted regulation be suspended or revoked.
Wow. Politics is unreal, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, God. Okay. I want to get through this one because I got to get off politics. The real cost of trucking, although I'm sure this will lead us back to politics, but we have a lot, you know, the specter of expenses gets raised often, but now that with the fuel shortage, this seems like a great time to talk about this again. Help me out. Where am I going?
All right. Well, this is a fairly accurate infographic, and if we look at what are the highest costs by percentage, fuel comes up in the top there, and fuel costs. Well, we're kind of at the mercy of the fuel supply. We're at the mercy of the retailers and their profit margin and the taxes, with the taxes being the lowest component of a fuel cost. And the one area where I say that we should have an increase. People are going to want to shoot me, but our highway system is broken. We need money for infrastructure. The most simplest and equitable way to collect money right now is still the motor fuel tax. That said, fuel also is one of your more manageable expenses if you don't idle, if you drive with a light foot and don't go crazy, have a fuel efficient truck instead of necessarily the one that looks the best. There's a couple of options to manage your fuel. Driver salary right there is number two on the list. That one, there's nothing you can do about. We need quality drivers. We owe it to them to pay them fairly. I think drivers are still a little bit underpaid in this industry. Mm-hmm. Overall, when we look at this, the rest of the stuff are small percentages of your overall cost to operate the truck, mm-hmm. but they all add up. And what this really shows, and this is a great way for you to educate your customers, especially those of you that have direct customers, that your rate is what it is because of factors beyond your control. The ever-increasing cost of buying new equipment, the ever-increasing cost of fuel, the amount of taxes that we pay to operate a truck on the highway. The number used to be thrown around that the average tractor trailer pays almost $17,000 a year in road use taxes. So there's a couple of different things to consider here. I like the way that this infographic is put together.
You know, it just made me think this should be like the placemat at every roadside diner.
Yes. And we right? need to educate the public. This is
amazing.
Something that,
that'd be awesome. And give kids crayons where they can, you know, fill in the... That'd be amazing.
This is something we should be sharing on social media for our friends outside of the trucking industry. Mm-hmm. Trucker owner operators are very aware of what their costs are, but the general public is not. This is definitely something we should be sharing with the public.
That fuel percentage really is pretty staggering. The longer I stare at it. No wonder John at Finest Towing, he always wants to talk about fuel.
Sure.
I mean, that makes sense. It is really, Wow, that is one heck of a... Because then I also was thinking, like, the real cost of a household. You know, you think about everything that goes into, right? You know, your electric and your power and your gas and your mortgage and taxes. This is really, really helpful. And we were talking about price per mile last night with Superflow Systems. You know, when you're booking loads. That's another thing, too. It doesn't matter how you calculate it, whether it's price per mile or you look at your cost structure. Just in general, knowing, you know, where every portion of the dollar you earn, in rough, those percentages, where it goes, what you need it for.
Absolutely. You can't run an effective business if you do not understand your true cost. And by that, I mean everything. As small business owner operators, we tend to spend the business money as if it is our own while we're out on the road. And what I mean by that is we might buy something that we use for the truck, but we're also using the truck for our personal use. So some of the fuel we bought for the business ends up driving us home or whatever. It's really bad in some cash industries where I know guys pay their cell phone bill and everything else by the business. They don't take that into consideration that that is a real household cost as well. So ultimately, we just need to know where every penny comes from, where every penny goes, so that you can effectively set your rate. Because how are you to know that you're actually getting a profitable rate if you don't have all the information?
You know, it's funny, too, is that I kind of rail against videos that show like somebody with like a fan of money and talk about how rich they're going to get. I literally got an email the other day of a guy that he's got content. He's been doing a long time and he's holding a fan of money. And I thought, why? You're doing just as much damage as the guy that's top loading.
Amen. Hey, before, because we're almost out of time here, we had one DOT question in the live chat. I answered it, but I want to answer it for our podcast audience that isn't reading the live chat. Danny B asks if an ELD must be mounted and inside of the driver, or if it can be mounted or hidden somewhere. The answer is your ELD device must be mounted firmly and within reach and sight of the driver while they're seated in the driver's seat wearing a seatbelt. If not, it is a DOT violation. And that's one of their low-hanging fruit that they'll go for, since they can't catch us on your handwriting's too hard to read or you drew the line a little crooked on paper logs anymore. They'll look for the other minor compliance issues. So yes, your ELD must be mounted and visible to the driver while he is in the driver's seat.
And it's a really good question, and I'm really glad that you said that for the podcast audience. Because it is, I mean, I could see, in fact, I think that there were ELDs, like, that some are attached by a dongle, and maybe you'll stick that in the, I don't know.
Well, that little dongle plugs into your data port, your CAN bus or your OBD2 port under the dash. But the device that you interact with, your cell phone, the tablet, the screen, that is what the regulation concerns. So this is where if you're using it on your own personal cell phone, which there's nothing illegal about that, it can connect via Bluetooth to your cell phone. Your cell phone must be in a mount somewhere on the dashboard. And remember, if you're going to mount on the windshield, you can't mount to the bottom side of the windshield. That's another separate DOT violation. Anything attached to your windshield must be above the AS1 or ASL, I forget what it is, but no more than 6 inches down from the top of the windshield. If it's mounted to the dashboard, you're fine. So with that said, if you're using your personal cell phone, remember, you can't just throw it on the seat in your shirt pocket or in the holster on your belt. It has to be in a dash mount while you are using it as an ELD, which is another reason why I don't recommend using your personal cell phone as the interface for your ELD.
Right, man. Separation of church and state. But that is another topic and another show entirely. And I know that we're out of time. So, Brian, I want to thank you once again. This has been another great show. What I did too in the live chat is I just shared, I found an ELD FAQ PDF because we love anagrams. So you click on that in the live chat. Also, if you need Brian's help, and I highly suggest, carry his phone number around, his email address, photos, maps, and slide rules, and have the information to contact Brian in case you, maybe you end up at a scale and you don't have the answer, or you don't have your camera on and you're not recording and you need help, you need a phone call. Brian, contact Brian, because he wants to help you. And he also, that's right, onair@yourdotguy.com is a great email address. And we lost Brian's audio. You're back? No? No audio? Cut. Okay, well, you know what? But that's okay, because we're going to end. We're going to end this show. Maybe Brian's headset knows that the show is over, and we're going to go. So, now he hears me.
Now you're back.
We're back. And we're back. All right, so you know what? This is a great way to end the show. Auto Transport Intel, DOT Compliance, Take 2. And I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Brian, for another great show. This is a lot of fun.
You're welcome, Jay. Reach out to us onair@yourdotguy.com. onair@yourdotguy.com. Happy to help you.
And if you comment in the videos, more and more, I've been sending Brian, if you comment on any video with a DOT compliance or equipment question, I'm going to send you over to Brian. Brian, thank you for being so helpful in answering all that stuff. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jay. Thank you, everybody. Take care. Okay,
you guys take care. Have a good week. Join us tomorrow on Dispatching Live. Thanks so much. Peace out, and we'll see you soon.